Hello and welcome to Middle Age Geeks, where we chat about all things geeky surrounding movies, TV shows, video games, and everything in between. I'm one of your hosts, Daz, and beside me, or across the screen from me, as always, is my trusty partner in crime, Philip Michelangelo Quinn. How are you doing, Philly? That's your real name, right?
I'm doing good, dude. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you've got cat out of the bag, my secret middle name. I'm not too bad. Yeah, it's been a good week. This is going to be a fun episode. It's kind of cool to do these kind of themed ones where it's not just confined to one review. So it's been fun to talk about like something that's really central to comic book culture and geek culture, and you know, even more so at the moment. So it's fun. It's been a good week, and I'm looking forward to getting stuck into it.
Yeah, happy days.
How about yourself?
So very good. Yeah, looking forward to this one. Doing a bit of research on X-Men, as Phil alluded to. We are going to tackle the X-Men kind of timeline movie form, because the X-Men 97, we're just going to talk about that, the cartoon that was a new release in recent weeks, which is fantastic. We decided maybe do a throwback episode to our history, maybe with X-Men, be it video games and movies and cartoons, comics, and everything in between. So we'll get stuck into that in a little bit. And for the retro corner, I might look back quickly at a game from 1994, an X-Men game that was etched into my memory and was traumatizing to try and play again this afternoon. But first, a little bit of news. The Penguin trailer was released last week, and it was absolutely fantastic. Again, not too long, as we had said before. You know, we're not fans of anything over kind of 2-3 minute trailers. It's great. It just showcases everything that you kind of want from that character, with the same kind of style and atmosphere from the Batman movie. And Colin Farrell is down as saying that it's incredibly dark and violent, which is an absolute like music to your ears. Because I saw in the trailer that it says, you know, from the creator of the Batman, you know, and it's I looked on IMDb, and it's Matt Reeves isn't down as directing it. It's directed by Craig Zobel. And always with, you know, TV directors, there's only a few that I actually know from specific episodes or shows I like. But he's directed episodes for like The Mayor of Easttown, which I think he was nominated for a few of those. I haven't seen any of that, but he directed some Westworld episodes. And more importantly to me, he directed a few episodes of The Leftovers, which is one of my favorite shows of all time. So I've hope with this one now. And he's directing all 8 episodes, which is, well, all 3. There's 3 have been listed on IMDb that he's directed so far. I would imagine he'll do the rest. What do you think about the trailer and the show? Are you hyped?
Yeah, like I mean, like we mentioned before, like I'm hyped for it. I loved that version of the Penguin and Matt Reeves Batman. Like, it was amazing when we first saw those photos of Colin Farrell a few years ago now when they first came out. You know, no one was even believing it was him, you know, first of all, the photos. Yeah, yeah. But then hearing the voice, you know, and like I find a lot of times I can hear his Irish accent coming through sometimes when I watch him, you know, and I just wasn't picking it up. He nailed it. You know, I don't think I would have known if anybody said, can you guess what actor it was playing that guy? I don't think I would have known. You know,
never.
It's a great performance. So I'm dying for that show. It's going to be class. Yeah, it really is.
Happy days. Yeah, so looking forward to that later this year. In other news, we were talking last week about Ghostbusters and whether that was going to be the end of the franchise, with Frozen Empire kind of getting murky reviews at best. But at a good box office weekend, made like 70 plus million globally, which is more than the first movie, and you're kind of going, okay, we might be in for another sequel if things continue along those lines. Other feedback, or moving on from news and feedback, Alison Byrne, who is my wife, asked us, do we actually just review shit movies? Do we look for shit movies? Because we're on a run of, we do review pretty shit movies, and we get good feedback.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we get good feedback on just having a laugh, and it's really enjoyable reviewing an absolutely torrid fucking movie. But like with The Spaceman, movie, when they're just kind of 2-star/3-star, it's not as fun to review, a kind of meh movie, because there's not much to shite on about. But I said in response to Ali, if you're listening, I'm not going to talk to you in the house. I'll talk to you on the podcast and say that we, because of the geek kind of theme to the show, it would be easy to go out and pick a movie every week, a movie, whether it's streaming or in cinemas or something, TV show or something, that is 4 or 5 stars that we both absolutely fucking love. And there are things that we watch and we love that we don't review on here, but because we're trying to keep it geeky and it tends to be, you know, maybe sci-fi or fantasy or something like that, there are quite a few clangers out there, and there's probably more misses than hits. Yeah, you know,
I think that we've kind of been, since we started the podcast, it's kind of been on that front been a little bit unfortunate with a lot of the stuff that's come out. Like, sure, Dune, fantastic, you know, but a lot of the sci-fi stuff that's come out has been meh to crap, whereas had we been doing this podcast like a few years ago, you know, maybe even pre-COVID, you're eating good then. So we're talking about Marvel Phase 3, you know, we would be talking about doing like an Infinity War and Endgame and Ragnarok and all these, you know, Spider-Man No Way Home and Far From Home and all these absolute bangers that were coming out, just, and that's just from Marvel. You know, hadn't we been doing the podcast then, it would have been great, but I think it shows that there hasn't been a massive amount in the kind of geeky kind of stuff that's come out, you know, say sci-fi, horror, fantasy, in the last few months since we started the podcast. I don't think, apart from, as I said, you know, Dune, Godzilla were both great, but there's been more kind of ones. I mean, look at this week, we had Ghostbusters, which it's purposely serviceable. As we said, I found plenty of it enjoyable. But at the same time, the other offering that's out at the moment is like Godzilla versus Kong, or Godzilla and Kong versus some other guys, or whatever the hell it is that they're trying to crank out with this one. And this is the offerings that we're getting it. You know, and if that's what's out, that's what we're going to review. You know, I would go along with Ali and say, yeah, we don't seek them out. I would much rather we were sitting here talking about absolute bangers. Like, you know, I loved when we had it. We're yet doing the 1999 section, or the
Oh, it was wonderful
Her Things episode, because they were just amazing movies for me. But yeah, so fuck, man, we're gonna have to find something great.
Yeah, next week we're under pressure, but that's why we openly
movies we're gonna be chatting about now too. So
exactly. But you mentioned after, I don't know if you said it on the podcast or afterwards, but we were looking at like the schedule of releases, and you said, oh, it's Kong versus fucking Godzilla. And you said, no, I'm not fucking doing that. I just don't want to go and see it, because it just means having to sit there taking notes and going, fuck me sideways. This is just drivel. Okay, so yeah, with that feedback out of the way, we will get into what we've been playing and watching this week. Philly, what have you been up to?
I haven't been playing a massive amount. I've kind of been tipping still into Final Fantasy Rebirth, and then also like I went back to replay Ragnarok, God of War Ragnarok. I only gave that the one playthrough, and I gave it. I gave it a serious go. I fucking did tons of the collectibles. I didn't 100% it now, but I did shitloads. A lot of the after game stuff and everything. But I wanted to go back. I played the first game thing through like 4 times.
Wow.
They got a war from 2018. So I wanted to go back and play to this one again. So I've started that. Watching wise, I've watched some stuff. I've rewatched a couple of things this week, and one of them I've kind of bummed about. So did you remember a mini series? It came out nearly, 20 years ago, called The Lost Room.
No.
So it was like a 3-parter, and it's like sci-fi mystery kind of thing. And it's really, really cool premise. There's like this motel room, right? That's in this other dimensional plane almost, right? Almost like from Control, you know? That's what kind of gave me the idea. Rewatch it. There's this motel room. But items from that room are out in our world, like hundreds of them are out in our room. So like there's a pen, a little clock, ticket stubs that people have bought. But in our world, each one has like magical fantasy properties, almost again, like Control, like items of power. Yeah. So like one of them is like a railway ticket that was taken obviously from that room. And if you tap it on someone's head, they disappear and reappear somewhere in fucking Texas. It hit the pen. Cool. If you touch it off someone in the thing, it electrocutes someone. Now, when all these things are in the room, and this is whatever kind of ethereal other space, they don't do anything. They're just what they're supposed to be. But in our world, they're that. And it's just, it's a whole thing. This cop gets embroiled in it because he ends up getting a hold of the key that accesses the room. And what happens in the room is you can go into a room, think about where you want to go. And when you walk back out of the motel room, you're in that place. So it could be anywhere, you know, any building, any wow. place, any part of the world. So it's a really, really cool premise, a little bit hammy against some of the acting, but I decided I wanted to rewatch it. And, you know, it's difficult to find. I found it online, but the episode two, the only place I could find it, they had it uploaded. They've uploaded episode two, and it's episode three twice, basically. So someone made a balls of it. So it goes episode one, episode three, episode three. So I can't even watch the middle episode. It's a fucking rage, and I was dying to go and watch it. But it's a great one. If anybody out there can find it, it's really good. Peter Krause is kind of the main guy in it. Elle Fanning plays his daughter. It's a cracking show. And then the other one thing I've watched was Space Above and Beyond, which is
a good. Oh yeah, you sent me a photo of that. Which is fucking brilliant. Yeah, so
that's like mid-90s. You know, that came out in 96 or something like that. Yeah. And like I remember loving that fucking show. Like it looks great now because that I know they cancelled. That was costing even back then. That was costing like a million episode or something. Like it was just the stages they were making and everything for it. Even the VFX almost looked like something from Battlestar Galactica, which was 10 years later. It's great to go back, just remember the music, and it's just, I don't know, it's fucking marines in space. I mean, it's just fucking cool.
Yeah, it's a win-win. Like, actually, when you sent that out to me, straight away when I just Googled the image alone, before I listened to the theme tune, just the image alone, the poster for the series, straight away you're just going, oh, yeah, just the characters brings you fucking right
and
back there.
And their ships, like, they all had their ships, rather, like, Battlestar Galactica has, like, as the Vipers, and it's a lot of it's ripped off from Battlestar Galactica, but they have their Vipers. These have hammerheads, so they all have their wicked, they're all a wicked little squadron, and they're called, fuck, I forgot their name, but they're all named after like a deck of cards, you know, this is the Queen of Hearts.
That shit's cool, man.
But it's really, really cool. So I'm gonna make sure I finish that off this week. It's really cool to go back to it and rewatch it. So another one, if people haven't seen that because you're younger than us, check out Space Above and Beyond.
Yeah.
It's a good series to get into if you're into old retro sci-fi. But no, that's all I've been up to. Have you been still lost in the world of Dragon's Dogma?
Fuck me, yeah. This game has taken over my life, absolutely. I think I'm 30 hours in, and it's already, like, it's game of the year for me. Strong contender. I don't see much beating it. Like, I have moments where I think, like, is this one of the best games I've ever played? It's mesmeric. It's really, like, caught me by surprise. Even we were talking about, you know, the controversy with the microtransaction and stuff like that. Even 30 hours in, like, if someone hadn't mentioned that there was, you know, microtransactions where you can buy, you know, fast travel tokens or whatever, if someone hadn't mentioned that to me, I wouldn't know of it in the game. There's never a point where you feel your progress is stifled or there's any dubious kind of gameplay choices to try and get you to purchase anything. Like, you know, if you're playing any Ubisoft game, you know, Assassin's Creed or whatever, the main menu is links to the fucking store to buy this and buy this and blah, blah, blah. This just throws you in. It really comes across like the game was just made. Capcom said, go off, make your fucking game. And some suit somewhere at the end of the game when it was made said, right, you can, let's, you know, charge somebody or put something, if somebody wants this, let's try and charge them for it. But it doesn't infringe on the beauty of the game whatsoever. And I'm just in love with the moment-to-moment gameplay and the physics engine and the completely unscripted fucking madness that can happen at any point. It's just, it's fantastic. Like, every time you venture out into a mission, you've no idea how it'll go, whether you end up getting devoured to pieces by a dragon or a fucking, you know, giant eagle comes at you from the mission, like, in the middle of nowhere. Like, the game is gorgeous. It's just stunning. I got trapped out on a mission at night, which you're not supposed to do, and you have a lantern with you, and it's beautiful game design where everything looks gorgeous at night with the lantern illuminating everything. But enemies see the lantern, so you kind of go, fuck. And I was, like, one of these missions, on the way back from a 25-minute mission and had a few skirmishes with goblins, and myself and my three pawns as a pack were getting through it, and we were attacked by a giant eagle griffin that fucking tore through us. Barely got through that. We had like really low health, down to 20%. We were fucking death's door, out of potions. Needed a campsite, you know, to replenish, and barely struggled, like creeping through bushes in the dark, literally pitch black, to get there. We got to a campsite, replenished everything, and it was all well and good. So the next morning we rested and we're like, okay, yeah, we're almost near our fucking capital city. And then we just went around a kind of a cliff down by the beach, and there's just a fucking giant dragon just chilling out on top of a little house. And this is like, oh, what the, like, because I just went down to try and see what, you know, you get curious, like we're almost back to the city. I might just see what's down here, maybe, because you're always rewarded for venturing and trying to discover more bits and bobs. So when we saw the dragon, it was just like telling all your companions straight away, just like, back away, follow me, get the fuck out of here, because this thing would just tear to pieces in seconds.
Is it a party of four, or what is it?
Party of four, yeah. It's myself.
Okay.
Myself and my main pawn, Jadzia, who the love of my life in game. She's brilliant. And then two other pawns that I kind of switch out depending on their level. And as I was saying last week, they're created by other people that are playing the game.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool like that. But yeah, but just touching on the physics of it, like it kind of breaks the kind of gaming norms, where when you get back to the city and you enter the gates and stuff, you think like, right, I'm safe from everything now. But we got back, we heard a bit of commotion. Just turned to the left, and where normally the market is, where you just, you know, buy potions and fucking craft items or upgrade items, there's just this giant ogre just fucking wrecking the place. It's like, what the fuck's going on here? So we battled him, like, in the middle of the city. Battled him for about 20 minutes. He had, like, four different health bars and took him down. But it's just, yeah, it's just moment to moment, you're just going, like, you just have no idea what the fuck is going on.
Class.
It's exhilarating. Yeah, exhilarating, petrifying.
Like I said, it was on my list with a bunch of others for this month, and the other ones kind of got only okay reviews. Like, I had that, Rise of the Ronin and Princess Peach. But the reviews of both Rise of the Ronin and Princess Peach aren't exactly too hot. And knowing that Princess Peach will never come down in price, I'm like, yeah, whatever, I probably won't touch that, but I will
get
stuck into Rise of Ronin in, you know, a couple of months when it's fucking half the rise it is now.
Absolutely,
I think I'm playing Final Fantasy for the moment until Stellar Blade comes out in a few weeks.
Yeah. Happy days.
So what about...
Watching, yeah, I watched the first episode of X-Men 97, which is fucking fantastic. I haven't grinned so much watching a cartoon in quite some time. Oh my God. It's just such a throwback. But just theme tune is just amazing. It just like shivers up your spine, tingles, just warm feeling inside. It's fantastic. Animation still on point. It's great. And you mentioned to me about getting they got all the cast back together, and I was just like, oh, and I couldn't remember what you said.
Cast, but some of them,
most of the cast back, and then Rogue, he was Rogue is the same character, but she's like fucking 70 or something now. you could so hear it in her voice, like she's
you really fucking... can, like, and it's not that she's playing it very well, it's just that you can much tell that it's
you're not 22,
it's an older woman who's playing this character of Rogue, and it's just, you know. It's very noticeable, I think. But like, it who gives a shit? It's fucking class. It's just great,
so
to be
good.
Back in that. Yeah. Like I'd only really started watching the original series recently. Obviously, it's on Disney Plus. So I gotten back into watching it recently. I don't know whether they kind of paused. I don't really remember how it finished. So I'm kind of wondering: should I just not watch?
Me neither.
Watch the first couple of episodes. Should I just stop and just try and blaze through? Blaze through the original cartoon, but it was a good few episodes, I think. But it's fucking cool. Yeah, hopefully the future is bright for the X-Men stuff.
Absolutely. And speaking of the future of X-Men, let's have a look at its past now, and over to Phil to have a look and chat through the X-Men movie timeline. Over to you, Philly.
Cheers, dude. Yeah, like, I think we're not going to do reviews. I think maybe, and there's a good few movies, so I rather can kind of do reviews of each one. We'll maybe just talk about, give a brief few minutes on each one about what we think, you know, and where are the possibilities of where it's going. Because I'm not going to try and do this in fucking chronological order, because I don't, it's a bit of a mess because the timeline's the way when they made First Class and stuff like that. So we'll just take each movie kind of in the order that it came out. And just for those who don't know anything about the X-Men, I mean, the X-Men are a little bit different than your likes of other superhero movies, because the basic premise here is that there's people born with like a mutant X gene, which activates around puberty and gives people superpowers. So this was created back by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee back in 1963. And it's just a great way, I think, of being able to give a bunch of people superpowers without having to give them all fucking origin stories. Like, you don't have to say, oh, he was struck by lightning, he was bitten by a spider, he was whatever the fuck happened to Dakota Johnson and fucking Madame Web. You know, it's whatever. You don't have
Did you not
to
know
to
she
no.
was bitten in an arrow?
What the fuck? Anyway, I love that idea that it's just a part of life for a lot of people, you know? And usually the kind of basic premise that from the different iterations, movies, comics, is that the good guys are kind of led by Professor Charles Xavier, and the bad guys, well, bad guys in the perfect commas, with Magneto, Eric Lencher. And it spawned fucking, you know, an expanded comic universe. What started off back in the 60s was cancelled due to low sales and started back up again. Completely expanded into like fucking, you know, hundreds of different mutants and to new mutants and fucking a different comic book series. Deadpool is in this universe, X-Force, all that kind of stuff, you know. And so, I don't know about you, Daz, but what I kind of love about the X-Men in general is that you look at, say, the Avengers or the Justice League, and they're teams that are thrown together by these big, huge superheroes in their own right, and they're kind of thrown together to make a team, you know, sometimes begrudgingly. Whereas this is a ready-made team put together. They are the X-Men. You know, they're not really going off on their own. And it's the themes that it tackles. Not everything is fucking truth and justice and the American way. It's tackling themes that would have been prevalent at the time and still prevalent now. Like it's a comment on racism and xenophobia and homophobia. You know, the powers aren't, you've got a superpower, let's go and save the world. For some people, these powers are an absolute curse. You know, like we talked about Rogue, she can't touch anybody. She can't touch anybody because she absorbs their life energy, or if she's a mutant, she absorbs their power. It's a curse for some people. And it's just, it really, for X-Men, really shows this completely other side of, you know, the superhero genre, I feel. And it's kept that throughout. You know, this is what, it was a comment on society back in the 60s, and it is now fucking, you know, 80 year, whatever it is, fucking 60 years later. Geez, you hear me? 80
That's
years,
so true.
60 years later. Math is hard. But what
like,
is,
no,
you,
you're
what
right.
is your kind
like,
of feeling
like,
around it? Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly like what you're saying in terms of the fact that like these characters weren't written with a solo comic or a comic in mind. You know, it wasn't like, oh, it's a Superman or a Spider-Man or whatever. It's like these powers kind of come around at puberty, they can be anything. You know, because there's no backstory, there's no like what's the backstory if you have a superhuman who's can't touch anybody, like what, that gets murky, where this they have a blank canvas to just kind of go, right, you can't touch someone. Like Rogue is just the perfect subject for this kind of talk, where just like, it's even in the movies you're kind of going, okay, you can do this, you can absorb someone's power, you can't touch anybody, but it's you wouldn't necessarily go, Jesus Christ, I want to be her. You sympathize with her because of this, like this curse of a fucking power. And the fact that there's like this, the kind of community, the kind of the family bond, where they're, as you're saying, an already made team throughout the movies, throughout the cartoon, saying comic books. I wasn't really the biggest fan, like, but I was a big fan of X-Men, but I didn't read the comics as much as other superheroes. Probably because when I was young, I wanted to maybe read about Spider-Man or Superman or Batman or any of these things. But the fact that it's so prevalent all their stories, as you're saying, about like it's acceptance and freedom and you know, accepting who you are and finding your own tribe a lot of the time. It's just an astonishing series. And as we're going to get into, it does deserve a lot better. You know what I mean? It's
it does.
It stands the test of time in terms of themes, 100%.
That's it, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's this kind of stuff is still, as I said, prevalent in society, you know, now as it was back then. And it's, you've both sides of it as well with X-Men. Like, you've got Xavier's school for gifted children, so parents don't really know what to do with their kids who've gone through and all of a sudden can fucking shoot ice at his fingers or walk through walls or whatever. And so he takes them on, and ideas about how to help humanity live with humanity, you know, live alongside humanity, and be part of kind of a harmonious thing. Whereas Magneto's the other side, he's like, no, we are the evolution of mankind. We are the next step. You know, we shouldn't have to kowtow to these people. We shouldn't have to bow before them. We shouldn't be, you know, be outcasts because of it. And it's just the two sides. And he wants what's better.
Two believable sides, you know, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's an understandable villain. He's not just out to kill everybody.
Absolutely.
He wants what's best for what he sees as his people. You know, it's like we talked about Thanos and how compelling Thanos was as a villain, because, yeah, okay, he's a fucking, what he's doing is wrong, but he's doing it for a reason.
But he believes it.
Right. Yeah. Genuinely, he's not killing people sadistically. He's literally killing off exactly half to try and make balance. And obviously it's fucking horrible killing people, but it's just, he has this kind of reasoning behind it. That's okay. Mm. He kind of is doing it for a good reason. He's not just a psycho. Whereas some bad guys we have are just psychopaths, you know, they just want out there to just want to watch the world burn.
Exactly. And Magneto's whole, his whole angle is, you see that on screen, that he's like, we are evolution and we are being shunned by society and we're second rate. And, you know, it's basically a racism towards mutants. And you see that in the movies and in the comics. So that element of his argument is there. It's there in society, but it's just the extreme measure just goes a little bit above and beyond. We're like, oh, I don't know. But everything that he's saying, you're kind of going, well, fucking, you're not wrong. You're a maniac, but you're not wrong.
I just, before we move on to the movies, actually, I saw this online, so I mentioned it about the con, just because they come the X-Men 97 and started up, and there's that, because there's always that thing, the romantic thing between Rogue and Gambit, you know, that was in the comics and in the cartoon, and there's that they can't be together, they can't touch, she can't touch anybody, and she has a line where she says something like, I wish I could just not have these powers just for a day. She, God love her, she must be horny as fuck, you know, and she can't be happy about it. Why doesn't she just borrow one of them collars? They have those collars that they slap on and it takes away your mutant powers. She could slap that one of those on every night, fucking get out, get down and dirty, or do whatever the hell she wants to do. She could go touch around touching people left, right and center. She could do whatever the fuck she wants. Just words of the wise there, bro. So look, with our kind of just intro about what the X-Men are all about, I think we'll just jump, as I said, jump into the movies kind of as they came out in order. So it started, like when it started off, it was 24 years ago when X-Men came out, the first X-Men movie by Bryan Singer. Like, the basic premise was that, again, we're kind of getting a backstory for some of our X-Men, and Magneto's trying to build this machine that's, it's going to be part, but he needs, so this machine basically is going to activate mutant genes basically in everybody, but he needs to be powered by this one person because it nearly kills him when he tries to power it, and so he wants to stick Rogue in it, he's looking to get Rogue, and obviously the X-Men are trying to protect it. And like, I don't think this is a particularly bad movie. I look back on this one quite fondly.
I'm very fond of this movie. Very, very fond.
Yeah, I don't think it's the best in the bunch, but I think Singer did a good job, because we weren't, you know, this is before we'd gotten into the swing of things of what a superhero movie could or maybe should be. But like, you know, it's cast well. Like, you know, fucking Patrick Stewart as Xavier is absolutely perfect. Hugh Jackman has been amazing as Wolverine. Ian McKellen as Magneto. I mean, this is a cracking, so well cast, you know? What are your memories of seeing this? Because it's, as I said, it's nearly a quarter of a century ago.
It blew my mind. I mean, I always look at this as it's the movie that started it all. You know, purists, whatever, would say Blade was the first, you know, comic book movie. But when I saw Blade, I didn't even know there was a comic. You know, I was just going, this is a fucking badass vampire flick, but this one, I think it's true that it's not the best. It's probably middle of the bunch, probably fourth or fifth best, but it's probably the most important by a country mile, because it started it all, because it showed us, as you said, what a movie, what a comic book movie could be. And having two amazing, like, Shakespearean actors playing these iconic talisman roles, like, showed the grandeur and what Bryan Singer was aiming for. And that, coupled with the modest budget, just made it sing so true. Like, it's like, even the opening scene, it opens in a concentration camp during the war, and you're just like, fuck me, what, like, this, here's your comic book movie. Straight away, you're not only are you on board, you're just going, this is something different. Like, this is not Superman or Batman or this kind of comic book shtick. This is somebody trying something different, bold. And it was just it's just, like, obviously McKellen and Patrick Stewart were amazing and well-known actors at the time, but Hugh Jackman is the real, not the real star, but that was like, fuck me, who's this guy? Like, this, he's Wolverine. Like, how do you cast Wolverine? That's how you fucking, they nailed it. First try, bang. Unbelievable. Yeah,
but isn't that mad?
Unbelievable.
I think remember at the time, I was thinking that I wasn't sure about the casting. I was like, man, this guy's way too fucking small, way too tall. You know, I always think of him as this fucking shorter, stocky kind of bloke, you know, rather than this big tall dude. So I was a bit kind of apprehensive about him. Wolverine's a fantastic character. I mean, just like a gruff little fucking ball of muscle kind of dude. But fucking Hugh Jackman, you know, plays into a T. I mean, we won't, as I said, we're just going to stick to the mainline kind of X-Men movies. But, you know, his performance in Logan, you know, Logan Noir,
just one of the greatest,
Logan, whatever you want to call it, is incredible, you know.
Just embodies the character. But, like, in terms of the confident start, but it also made very clever kind of choices. Maybe they were, like, scared, not so much embarrassed, but, like, from a point of the filmmakers, the costumes, where they kind of went, okay, it's a bold movie, we're taking chances, blah, 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 but we're not quite going to go with the fucking full yellow fucking leather suits.
Yeah.
Just like, we'll just stick to black for that. So that, again, that was perfect, because it could have been a moment where it, you know, first two acts do it really well and then they all suit up in their fucking yellow gear. And that would have been, it just wouldn't have worked. It would have been, fuck, like, that's a bit too much, you know, but it's a grounded world. Just let's say, and over the movies, they kind of spill more color in bit by bit, which was a clever touch. But a lot of fanboys online are just like, oh, I want the yellow fucking leather suit. It's just like, you don't.
You think you want it.
You don't. You think you want it. That's baby steps. Baby steps. But yeah, colossal triumph, this movie. Like, started it.
Yeah, like, I would say to you, it's middling with regards to the X-Men movies that have come out. But for what it was, like, even to look back now, like, as I said, it's just a good movie. It's not a great movie, but for what it kind of started and the choices they made were great. For me, the best X-Men movie is the next one, is X2. I put
1,000%
it ahead of Days of Future Past. I think it's, and again, this was Bryan Singer again, the second one. And it's, this one again was, this time we brought in Brian Cox. Oh my God, who doesn't love Brian Cox? And he's playing William Stryker. And if you know the X-Men movies, he's the one who'd kind of taken in and done the experiments on Wolverine. So we kind of have that. We get a bit more of Wolverine's backstory, and you know, there's so many amazing set pieces in this movie. Like the one at the start in the White House is absolutely outrageous with Nightcrawler. It's one of my favorite scenes in a superhero movie. The idea.
I think it's
just
one of the greatest openings to a movie.
It's absolutely. I could watch that over and over. Like, and, I actually remember, I think I went with you to see this twice in the one day. Back in the day when it came out, I was just thinking that the other day, because I remember seeing that scene and going, I'm waiting to see this again later on in the afternoon.
You're 30 seconds into the movie, you know, and it's just a pre-credit sequence. And it's it just starts kind of slow on the Oval Office. And then when it kicks into this teleporting action scene, it's just at that, like, still today, I watched that yesterday just on YouTube, but it's still fucking unbelievable. You think back to, when was this, 2002, 2003, when this came out, it just blew your fucking socks off. And it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen then. And I still would say it's up there with one of the best cinematic scenes I've ever seen. It's just absolutely, talk about like the first movie starting with very poignant fucking introduction and fucking during World War II. And then this starts with completely off the wall, blistering fucking action scene straight away, completely different tones and themes, but you are fucking in 1,000%. You're just like, what the fuck is this? Even if the rest of the movie is utter shite, I'm going to watch this at 7 times for that scene. Easy peasy. Yeah, like I saw this about 11 times.
The camera work is fantastic as well. Like going into the Oval Office and the keyhole or the IP hole, whatever. And just ingenious. It's done so well.
A director at the height of his powers. Sort of
he did an absolutely incredible job with this movie. Like again, as I said, the premise here then is Wolverine finding out what's going on, the school gets raided and all the kids get taken hostage. That whole scene is incredible as well.
Yeah.
And during while that's happening, Jean is, her powers are starting to grow and grow and grow and kind of becoming out of her control. But it's definitely like, it's got a lot of the kind of the darker stuff in it. Like you see Magneto is being captured and he's in prison. And so it's another great scene is Rebecca Romijn going to bust him out. And so she injects your man, she chats your man up in the pub, injects him with all the iron, and then he goes he's in an all plastic prison because he can't have any metal. So as he's walking through, the machine beeps, they're like, you've got metal, and he's like, no, you seem to be okay, go on through. And he's got a plastic tray and a plastic nightstick and all this stuff. And then when he gets in there, he's fucking got all this iron pumped in him, and it's just the way Magneto puts his hand up,
comes out,
and just lifts him up in the air, and all the fucking little tiny particles of iron come out through him. And he turns into these fucking balls and just metal ball and just starts fucking firing him and floating on one. It's fucking cool.
It's so dark, but it's so ingenious. That was fantastic.
Like you said, the really dark parts, like your man Stryker's son, he's using him to mind control people, and he controls all these mutants with this little drip thing that he puts in the back of their head. Lady Deathstrike, her fight with fucking Wolverine is absolutely awesome, you know, and then she goes back to being herself just as she dies, you know. God, I was absolutely in love with her, Kelly Hu, back when that movie came out, obsessed. She's gorgeous. But for me, it stands out as the best out of the bunch. But there has been some great movies, but like that was 2 years after the first, and we had to then wait for 4 years then to get the next one. So the next one was X-Men The Last Stand, which came out in 2006. And this was Brett Ratner.
Very curious. Like the main thing, actually, thinking back to this, when I was just thinking about the movie, because I think it's probably not as bad as when it came out. I haven't seen it since, but I imagine that it's not as awful as I thought it was. I thought it was like absolute fucking rubbish because of the bar that had been raised so much by X-Men 2 were this. But even in the lead up to it, when Bryan Singer decided to do something else, and he had cultivated this fantastic first offering, second offering, one of the best sequels, one of the best action movies, comic book movies of all time. And you're building up, it's just like, oh my God, here you go. Just nailed, or just even just get a 4-star movie out of the third one, and you've got one of the best trilogies around. But bringing Brett Ratner in, who would is the most, he's like known as a studio man, you know, the director for hire. He was coming off Rush Hour and Red Dragon and about 20 fucking Madonna and Mariah Carey movie or music videos. But he's coming in, and it's like, it's just a baffling choice to replace Singer. It's like Peter Jackson doing the first two Lord of the Rings and then deciding to do something else, and they bring in Zack Snyder to do fucking Return of the King. You know, it's just like, why? This is a tonal, like, fucking nightmare. And I just remember it just being a huge letdown, even though it's still like that. There's scenes in it where, you know, with Dark Phoenix and Jean Grey, and towards the end where Wolverine trying to get to her, and kind of poignant, and that's the things that they built on in the first two movies still play out, but that's because of Singer's work in the first two movies. Some of them hit home decent enough in Last Stand, but the rest of it was just like, this is just feels all wrong. Doesn't feel like the third movie in this franchise. Just, curious. What did you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, and the thing is that there is some cool stuff about the script that was written. Like, I like the idea that this was about a cure that was after being found, you know, and of course, there's people who were saying this is fucking awful. And then there's the likes of, as we said, Rogue, who's like, no, this is a chance for her to get to be with, because she's, you know, she's with Bobby, but she can't actually be with him because obviously she can't fucking touch him. And so she's doing this so they can be together. And because it's, again, it's a curse for some people. And, you know, for some, it's like there is no cure. It's like, as I said, it's like saying there's a cure for, you know, homosexuality or something. I'm like, no, there is no fucking cure. You can't cure someone. It's just people who are who they are, you know, and we should be just accepting of that, not trying to find ways out of it. And it's just, I love that complicated, you know, theme to it. And again, there's some really cool scenes in this, but for the most part, they've cast a lot of the wrong people. Like, if Vinnie Jones as
baffling, as, that as just like, you know, that's and a perfect example of somebody getting it wrong.
And just giving them terrible lines as well, you know, and like, whereas
I'm the Juggernaut bitch,
Kitty Pryde is great, but yeah, that I'm the Juggernaut bitch, it's just,
no, you're a footballer. It's not this, what this, the fuck?
There's too many scenes like that. There's some poor choices of casting, and then. Yeah, it's not a fun movie for, you know, what a movie is essentially shitloads of people with fucking superpowers. There's a big fight between essentially the good guys, bad guys. It was an absolute miss, and it set back the whole X-Men stuff. For, as you said, it was on a trajectory
massively
to go right up, and it set it back. But we got the next two movies ended up being Wolverine standalone movies, which weren't very good, you know, as much as...
That's a studio panicking,
I think James Mangold, what he needed, probably needed in his, was maybe a bigger, you know, more well-known villain, maybe, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
For the Wolverine, whereas X-Men, I think that actually came out after First Class. So actually, no, the next one was Origins.
X-Men Origins,
Adam Hoodlum. Yeah, so it came out after First Class, but the next one actually was X-Men. Yeah, so it was X-Men Origins Wolverine by Gavin Hood. Not even gonna talk about it. It was shite.
Just awful. That was the whole fucking movie.
With that
Deadpool
memed to death, you know. Yeah, Deadpool and stuff. So we'll just breeze past it and move on to what was our next.
But X-Men Origins, actually. X-Men Origins has two, old school. Here's a great idea for a Wolverine scene. Let's have him walking away from an explosion in slow motion. Good man, Gavin Hood. I think there's three shots in that. That shows that that movie was a studio by committee going, what's cool? And just like, what the fuck? Yeah.
Yeah.
Rant over.
It was pants.
Yeah.
And then, so I think, like, as I said, we got back into the mainline stuff. We got X-Men First Class. So this was basically rebooting, soft rebooting, because, you know, there's crossover of the characters, but it was basically going back to... The very first, the start of the mutants. It's a young Professor X. Once again, perfectly cast, if you ask me, I think.
Amazing.
James McAvoy is incredible. Michael Fassbender is incredible. And Nicholas Holt. I mean, these are all great actors and great choices for these roles. And this was Matthew Vaughn. So we mentioned on last week's episode that, you know, his style didn't really come through, or we weren't mad on Argyle because what was all super stylish and really hits before. You know, didn't hit Nargal, but this was an absolute hit. I loved this. I thought it was fantastic. I love the feel to it, the stuff with Kevin Bacon again at the start, and again in Auschwitz, and I'm not sure if it's actually Auschwitz, but in concentration camp and stuff. And it's gritty, it's dark, but it's got that awesome retro feel. You know, it's a different kind of side because it's a younger. It's a younger Charles Xavier who's a little bit more.
It's a different energy there,
He's chatting up women and he's cool. He can walk, obviously. You know, it's people talk about the mutant problem and people don't really know. It hasn't kind of exploded like it has, say, when they're kind of all living among us. Everybody knows about it. It's kind of a little bit kind of, they're just calling it the problem now because it's only coming to the fore. But did you, what are your feelings around this? Did you feel this was the start and end of something great after what we had?
Yeah, absolutely. Just the tone, like we kind of knew from the trailer. Even you're just going, oh yeah, here we go. We're kind of back on track here. And Matthew Vaughn, obviously, I was a big fan of him at the time. But it's centered around mainly just the chemistry between the two leads. And normally that is chemistry between, male and female in some kind of rom-com or caper or something like that. But with this, it's the two guys that struck it off screen. Like they're really, really good buddies, and you could see that chemistry on screen where they're just, you totally believe that they could sit down in a pub, have the crack, and have a furious row at the same time and wake up and be mates kind of thing. And
Yeah.
that just, and this is before Michael Fassbender like absolutely exploded into the stratosphere. James McAvoy too. I think James McAvoy was just coming off Atonement, and he was like hot property. So this was another win in the casting department. Yeah, but yeah, just remember the two guys. There's some fantastical shit that's going on in this movie. Some of the best scenes are just the two of them just arguing face to face in a room or standing,
Yeah.
just going at it, and proper screaming arguments. It's fucking brilliant. Like, script is tight. Just everything else is fantastic about it. But yeah, just remember the two of them just being these guys. They're perfect in terms of the caliber of actor to come from the older guys and show them when they're younger. It's just totally believable. And yeah, they
Yeah.
fucking nailed it. Like,
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think Matthew Vaughn did a great job with this. Like the casting is perfect, well directed, and I think again I thought that this was going to be the next step, and what we got, the next movie was even better, because after, again, we're skipping past the next Wolverine movie, and the next one was Days of Future Past, and this is where we're getting the mix of the original ones, like with Patrick Stewart and this is a famous comic book. I think it was also in the Sorry, I'm not sure what was it in the comic or was it just in the TV show? I often get confused if it was in both or not. But it's a famous storyline, Days of Future Past. And so yeah, we
Sentinels,
got to see
yeah.
the combination of these actors, and it's with Wolverine getting transported back into the past, and we're getting the glimpse that we jump back and forward from Wolverine gone back to try and stop Oliver Trask from creating these Sentinels in the first place, because in the future almost all mutants have either been wiped out or been kept as slaves. And it's incredible to see those, just all those, again, we're talking about all in the one movie now. This is now obviously not in the same scenes, but it's just the only thing, right? And I'm just gonna say, right, I love this movie, but we're in the Marvel universe, right? We've now decided that because of Deadpool, and Deadpool talks about linking them all up together and all the rest of it, presumably this is all linked together, right? It's all the one massive universe. We've now seen Hank McCoy, Beast. We've seen him in the Stinger for the Marvels, right? So Wolverine goes back in time and he changes time, and so the future changes. But in Infinity War, Hulk lets us know that's not how time travel works. You can't just go back in time and everything changes. And there's a whole big fucking story about it. He's talking about, what's the Back to the
They
Future's load
go
of
to
bullshit?
lengths to discuss that.
And it's just funny that they're setting the same up. But I mean, you have to get used to that when you're watching these X-Men movies, because the timelines are all fucking over the place. They're all over the
Like
shop.
the
Like
like
they're
yeah, like this movie. I'd imagine, from an actor's point of view, reading this movie or reading the script, even if you're involved in it, at a deep level, one of the main characters, I'd say it's a difficult read. It would have to be explained to you, like, and it's ballsy to tackle it. Like, everyone straight away when they announced that they were doing Days of Future Past, everyone, I guess, in the same breath, we're going, fuck yes, and also going, oh fucking hell, how are you going to do that on screen in 2 hours? You know what I mean? Even 2.5 hours. It's just so bald, it's so convoluted, and it's so you need you and it's Bryan Singer coming back into the fold, is, I think, the only reason that this not only worked but was a towering success. Because how he just makes things that are so convoluted just very, very easy. He just shows you what you need to see, and takes you through the story, and it's just edited impeccably, where you know exactly what's going on at any given time, even towards the end with Sentinel action scene, which is fucking phenomenal. It's like the choreography and the geography of the scene. You know what I mean? Where the camera is just fucking flying around to so many different people. You always know where you are, and it's breathtaking stuff. I remember I saw that. It's one of the last films I think I saw on Savoy No. 1 in Dublin before I think they split it. But yeah, I watched it with like almost 1,000 other people, and fuck me. It's just, yeah, it was like being in a cinema in New York or something. People were cheering. It was just like loud, yeah, fucking, you just don't get that over here. But this was, there was a lot of comic book fucking nerds in it, and there's a lot of callbacks to specific moments in comics and stuff. But it's, yeah, it caters for everybody. If you just walked in, you still get as much out of it as if you are a bona fide fan of fucking 40 years, you know?
And as you said, it was a ballsy effort to try and pull together, to link together those two sets of movies. And we just before we move on, we can't let it pass by without talking about the Quicksilver scene.
Oh, yeah.
So this is like, is Evan Peters, who I'm just a massive fan of.
Astonishing.
The scene of breaking Magneto out of the prison that he's in. And that fucking speed chase, the slow motion when he's running through the kitchen up on the walls and stuff, and just turning the guns, turning the pants, you know, and it's all just super slow motion done. And it's just, it's so well done. You know, you got the air gun in his face, making his fucking cheeks blow as he's going around in slow motion.
Just laugh out loud, cheer out loud.
And it's just, yeah, it's fucking, it's really funny. I can't remember the name of the song that's on it. It could be a fucking song or something. Something really, really slow down and chill, and he's just got his headphones on as he's
there's
got
a
his
perfect
ski goggles on.
There's a perfect example of what we were talking about last week about getting kind of juxtaposing an action sequence with a ballad song or a romantic song or something like that, and the two of them working. This is a perfect example of that working. Can't remember the song, but it's just perfect. Like it was a genre defining moment in terms of action sequences. Like technology had just about caught up where you could do this. And yeah, it was just like we talk about X2 at the opening scene. This was one of those, holy fuck, like, you know, you're grinning, really enjoying it, but at the same, in the back of your mind, you're going, what? This is fucking blowing my fucking socks off. This is, how are you doing this? Like, and again, straight away, you're going, I'm going to see this movie about 12 times because of this 3-minute sequence. Astonishing stuff.
That's great. And once again, Evan Peters was great cast. Fucking Peter Dinklage was cast well. I mean, again, they're not casting brilliant. Out of the park for the most part in these movies. And that's absolutely class. And then the problem is, like, that is as great as that movie is, Bryan Singer also directed X-Men Apocalypse, like, which is our next movie. Yeah. We get another great scene, you know, Evan Peters scene, and this time it's it's quite near to the start as well, and it's Sweet Dreams by Annie Lennox, and again it's fucking fantastic done that he's milling through the house and he's saving him, because when he shows up the place is mid explosion, so he's fucking jumping, and it's trying to copy and capture the magic of that scene, you know, from the previous movie, so it doesn't quite
the worry is that watching that when they put that scene so early in the movie, it's kind of like, okay, are they must be worried about this, because it's not like, oh, wait for the great fucking scene. It's when it starts kind of with a really, the kind of the best parts of the movie is in first few minutes. I was shocked, actually. I went back just to check who directed this, because I remember at the time going, oh, Bryan Singer, you know, coming out of it going, is that your first proper dud? Like, because I think I fell asleep during this movie and I wasn't tired. Like, I just remember just Oscar Isaac just looking at him just going, what a waste of a fucking amazing actor in this movie. It's just like, what the fuck is going on with that character?
Like, he's one of the he's one of the best all time villains. Like, and then in the end, we got the stinger was at the end of the Days of Future Past. You know, you see him and it's him from the back or whatever, as a younger
with the four horsemen
building fucking pyramids or whatever, you know. And it's just, we're seeing that and saying, oh, yes, the next movie's gonna be an apocalypse, cannot fucking wait. Oscar Isaac is being done dirty by Marvel because both of his fucking characters he's played are from ancient Egypt. You've got fucking Moon Knight, and both of them have ended up not doing too well
at all.
I kind of hope that if someone better comes in, they could do something cool with Moon Knight, because he's such a great
character. Yeah.
He's a great character. I love that. The split personality stuff is really, really cool. But yeah, this was a miss. You know, this was a miss. And as much as I'd like the way they kind of introduce some of the newer characters with didn't think Olivia Munn was great as Psylocke. I loved Alexandra Shipp as Storm. I thought she was cool. She looked really awesome, the kind of half shaved head and everything else. She was, but I wasn't a massive fan. I don't know if maybe the younger kind of versions of some of them didn't really come off, Jean Grey and stuff. And his costume as Apocalypse
Oh
just
yeah,
fucking, he looked, I know we've said this before about other characters, but he looked like Power Ranger style stuff. It was like big, almost like platform shoes kind of thing on him, but it just,
it just
it was,
didn't
it was
work
a
at
weird
all of this.
design
There was
choice.
cringe moments. There was just structurally, it's just yeah. There were just moments where I was just going, just how is this so clunky? You know what I mean? It's fucking Bryan Singer. And he's not normally when something like this happens, you know, it is the whole dreaded studio involvement or they try and, you know, throw in extra villains or something. But Bryan Singer's fucking well at the time before he did all this nasty shit, was top of the pops, like, you know what I mean? They fought to get him back in for Days Future Past and paid him a fucking pretty sum to get him in. So he had free rein with this. Maybe, you know, is it a case of did somebody have too much control or did he like, but how can somebody who's I just somebody who makes the first few movies, some of the any director that gives you the usual suspects, it's like a Nolan, you know, Christopher Nolan making Memento and these things. You just kind of you know straight away that like this person you'd like to think they can't make a movie like this. But coming out of Apocalypse, I was just going, did someone like something has gone wrong behind the scenes? Has to have, because there's no way
There
Bryan
have, but
Singer sits at the end of that and goes, yeah, I love it.
I would agree with that as well, just solely because that there's parts in this movie that are so good that they're like, why the fuck? Like the whole stuff with Magneto and the kid and everything getting killed and him killing all those guards,
Yeah,
him being
phenomenal.
In the steel mill and stuff, it's fantastic. Because a lot of stuff like that's in this, you're gonna go, actually, that's really fucking cool. The scene from even the scene from with Apocalypse kind of first getting buried and everything. That's fucking, the slamming the pillars down and trapping them and stuff. That's cool. There is some like re stuff in here. You're gonna go, Jesus, there's a re some these are really compelling.
Moments, yeah.
But then they're mixed in, but then they're mixed in with. The cage fight angel doing the cage fight thing with his quick wings and he's drinking
What's the
it.
fucking
He's
point
almost
to
like a
that? Like,
fallen angel because he's drinking. And it's just there's too many scenes like that that are kind of thrown in. It's almost like two people were fighting over, no, the movie's going to be made this way. No, it's going to be made this way. And it doesn't really know what it wanted to be. And it's a shame because, again, as I said, this is one of the bigger, badder, awesome fucking bad guys. And he could have been a bad guy in multiple X-Men movies almost. I mean, you could have made an Apocalypse
Yeah.
saga kind of thing, like not as bad as Thanos and do
100%,
about
isn't it?
20
Like,
movies, but
yeah.
you could have done a two or three story arc with him because he's such he is one of the big
Like
bads.
in the comics, like he's a massive part of it and he rears his head numerous times. He's never gone. You know what I mean? He's like a Magneto. He's a this towering villain that's like the mention of his name, you just go, fuck. How the fuck are they gonna deal with this guy? And then it's just yeah, poor Oscar Isaacs, because like he's a lot more to give than whatever he was given with that fucking the suit where it looked like you barely fucking turn his fucking head, like just it's
Yeah,
like
it was
1990
a bizarre
Batman,
looking
just like
suit, man.
yeah, crazy, yeah, bonkers.
We did get like, I mean, obviously after that we got movies that were outside of that. You're like either side of it. There was Deadpool 1 and Deadpool 2 were kind of with Logan were either side of X-Men Apocalypse. But the last proper X-Men movie we got was 5 years ago, and that was by Simon Kinberg, which was X-Men Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, and
Which
I
I
don't think I've
which
seen this. Did I see this with you? No, because I
I
don't think I've
don't think
seen
you
it.
saw it with me.
Yeah, well then I haven't seen it. Because
Well,
yeah, I don't
yeah,
think I
this
bothered.
is
I think you told me it was absolute fucking trash, and it's like, okay, I'm not wasting
yeah,
2 hours of my time.
like it,
Even the
again,
trailer for
it's
this
part
looked so bad, like.
yeah, and it is, and I think they I had gotten the idea for the trailer that I thought there was something way cooler than what it was. So in the trailer you can kind of see like, so Jean, it's Jean Grey's movie really, and her powers are she's been they're up in space near the start and there's this phenomenon up there and she ends up absorbing it to save these astronauts who are going to get killed. And so basically all the kids, the kids fucking X-Men go up into space on this fucking space shuttle. She goes out, she absorbs it, she's able to survive in space because she's fucking, you know, the, one of the most powerful mutants ever, blah, blah, blah. But in the trailer, you can see her and she's being talked to by this woman in white, Jessica Chastain's character. And she's kind of this devil on the shoulder and telling her, no, you don't have to, you know, you should be able to use your powers and you're this, that, and the other. And you're, you know, she's really talking to her that way. And I, for some reason, got it in my head. It was a Mr. Brooks style scenario. I thought that that character was going to be her mental representation of what the Phoenix is inside her, the Phoenix Force. And I was like, that's so cool. Like, if you've watched Mr. Brooks, you know, with Kevin Costner, and you have John or William Hurt, isn't it? William Hurt is playing
William Hurt,
his
yeah.
kind of the, yeah, he's playing the representation. He's playing Marshall, which is a representation of his psychopathic tendencies. And it's awesome. And he's that representation, he's that side of him that, you know, only he sees, we don't see. And I thought that's what that was. I was like, that's such an elegant way to do it that no one else would see it, but she has this being talking to her. But no, it's a fucking dumbass fucking story altogether.
What, yeah,
Basically,
what is
these
the
other
point of that
aliens have,
then?
so these other aliens are being chased, they're chasing down, they want this power for themselves, but they're kind of
Okay,
these
right.
weird shape-shifting things. So Jessica Jane is just this nobody. She's sitting at her gaff having a dinner party, and these monsters, they can take over the form of people, like they're body snatchers kind of thing. And so she's just a randomer, and they just take her over. And so she's not even, she's just some fucking alien, some dumbass alien race who want the Phoenix power for themselves. And they're super strong and they're hard to kill. And so it ends up being X-Men versus these dumbass aliens, you know. But like there's a couple of cool bits, like the idea of Jean Grey losing the rag, you know, she accidentally kills Mystique, which is kind of cool and dark, and she's kind of an outcast because she can't go anywhere. She tries to go to Magneto for help, and he's got his own little sanctuary where he takes care of these mutants he's looking after. They have like a commune where they all look after each other. And yeah, there's some cool parts in there, but for the most part, it's pants. Like the action parts are pants, and one big part on like a train that's fucking terrible. It's just, yeah, it's a poor movie and a really shitty way to end, because I was really hoping after, I was hoping that Apocalypse was a blip and that we'd come back strong. And you know, the whole Phoenix saga is such a huge thing again in the X-Men comics, and I was like, well, they could do something really cool with this. This could be a 2 or 3 parter.
This
But
is their second time
no,
trying
it's
it
a
in the timeline as well, so it's still
it's
messing it
just
up.
it's so look, that was the last one we got, you know, which is 5 years ago. Now I would kind of hope that the future is bright for the X-Men. I'm hoping Deadpool just resets everything in Deadpool 2. But you know, the likes of getting X-Force movie, the fact that we see Hank McCoy in the Marvels, you know, I'm hoping that we're gonna get a decent movie. But it's just, we've mentioned a few times here that we've been on a bit of a bad run at the moment with Marvel. So I'm just, don't fuck it up. If you're gonna do it, please bring it back, an X-Men movie, and do it right. Same way I want to see Fantastic Four done right. You know, these are
Maybe that's their
massive perfect Marvel
maybe
properties. You know,
that's
just do it
their
right.
Oh, absolutely. And maybe that's the next phase of Marvel that probably should have been this phase instead of going crazy with this fucking multiverse, which is great for a movie or two, but to base an entire like 4 or 5 year saga around it isn't working, doesn't work, and yeah, it's been a bit of a shit show. So maybe like they just reset and go again with Fantastic Four and X-Men as the basis for their next phase, because you know the Avengers, even it, like the next Avengers movies, it's like I honestly don't think. I couldn't care less. I don't even know who the fuck are the Avengers. You know, it's just this phase has gone so fucking arseways that like I'm just waiting for in 2 or 3 years' time when we know we're getting Fantastic Four and we know the rights are passing back with X-Men. So, and Kevin Feige has said, yeah, I'm delighted. Like to we'll give X-Men their due. Like and fingers fucking crossed because yeah, it's a deserves better, man. It does deserve better. Some just
It does. But
phenomenal characters and such canon to draw from.
at the same time, like, I mean, we say it deserves better, but it has had some great movies. Like the ones we've named there, for the most part, have been really good. Like there's a dozen movies in the universe, if you clash in the Wolverine movies as well. You know what I mean? So like, even just to run through them, you know, in the order they came out, like X-Men, really good. X-Men 2, fantastic. Last Stand, crap. X-Men Origins Wolverine, crap. Last Stand, fantastic. Wolverine, okay. Future Past, Days of Future Past, fantastic. Deadpool, fantastic. Apocalypse, crap. Logan, fantastic. Deadpool 2, fantastic.
True, true.
You know, Dark Phoenix, crap. Like, so in that universe of the X-Men, we've got a bunch of really good ones. Just it's just that each time it's kind of ended a trilogy or a series,
Poorly,
it's
yeah.
ended on a bum note. Yeah, it ended on Last Stand. It's ended this time with Dark Phoenix. You know, it's not, it's leaving us kind of, it's left it dead in the water. You know, that the last movie of the trilogy has been a kind of a real fucking, you know, and actually this was a quadrilogy. But it's just, yeah, it's just a bit of a bummer the way it ended on it. But like, for the most part, if you want to get out there, if you're listening to some of the movies we're talking about, get like that list that I've just given there. There's a ton of really great movies. A lot of fucking a lot of Hugh Jackman. If you're a Hugh Jackman fan, he's fantastic. You
Well,
know,
he's brilliant.
there's a lot to
You
love
watch him
there.
all
It's
day, like.
really, as I said, yeah, it's just some great casting, some really fucking great direction, great scenes on show throughout the series. So it's not all bad. It's mostly really, really good. It's just that it's ended on a bum note, and I'm hoping now with X-Men 97 and with the touching on what may come for the future of the X-Men, that hopefully we're on the right direction to get back into the X-Men universe, because it's such a wonderful, wonderful thing to do, and there's so much there. You know, what we're going through at the moment in the world as well. You know, it's so much to identify with. I'd love to see it get back to its roots
Absolutely.
and knock out some couple of great movies. But yeah,
Super.
that's it. That's why I just wanted to run through them. That was fun to have a yap through those and without getting stuck into the minutia of some fucking terrible
The
movie this week. It's
nitty-gritty.
been fun to kind of revisit these. Yeah, it's been fun to kind of go talk through these again. As we're talking, I'm kind of saying, geez, I think I want to rewatch some of these.
Oh, stop. Yeah, I
Or
want to
even
watch
just some
like
of the great
X2 straight
scenes.
away again. Like, yeah. Yeah, thanks for that, Phil. That was fucking brilliant. Yeah. It's really even just to revisit some of those highs gives you a warm feeling inside. I want to just pick out a few fantastic scenes. I want to watch that some of those slow-mo scenes again now on YouTube after this episode. But
Same.
yeah, so we'll move on then to our retro corner this week. It should be a brief one. Because it was X-Men centered, I was trying to think back to X-Men related video games that I might have played or loved back in the day, and struggled to find absolute bangers because even though there's been, Jesus, 30 plus games over various consoles and handhelds over the last 30, 35 plus years, I think there's only like about four or five that have decent reviews online, which is fucking crazy. And I say with decent, like I think Game Ranks did top 10, and I think the top 10 ranked ones in Metacritic, the number 10, the 10th best was like ranked 50, then 55 out of 160. Like, there was only a few that actually got 70 and above. But the top two were actually games I didn't play that were X-Men Legends, I think. Is it Legends and Legends 2? They came out in 2004, 2005. I think I was traveling at the time. They came out in PS2 and GameCube. They were supposed to be brilliant, and I've never actually played them. But the one I do remember playing was back from 1994 on the Super Nintendo, and I remember it vividly because I was a Nintendo guy, and on the Sega Genesis at the time, I think they had two or three X-Men games had come out but hadn't come out on Nintendo. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, like, you know. And then eventually in 1994, X-Men Mutant Apocalypse came out, which was a fucking banger at the time. It was published and developed by Capcom. They were flying high at the time. And I mentioned that we had to wait so long, but when it did arrive, it was the 16-bit era, and it was fantastic. It was absolutely amazing. Like, I picked up the game earlier this afternoon by nefarious means, playing it on my Steam Deck. I checked online, this game is like all games around this time. It's so hard. Like, it's so it like I'd like to think it's really hard, rather than me being an absolutely really shit gamer these days. But there's a YouTube walkthrough online, and the walkthrough is 45 minutes. Like, we talked about how short these games were, and they were so tough because the developers didn't want people to finish the games. Like, they don't want you to finish this game that cost you £60 in fucking 1994. Finish it in an hour. But I played this game. I'm pretty sure I played this game for weeks, if not months. it's tough. I played it again today. I couldn't get past the first level. It was shocking. But the game is essentially like a side-scrolling beat 'em up for the most part, a la Final Fight and Streets of Rage, with the customary, you know, dumb henchmen who just keep coming at you. And there's lots of fun seeing these cartoon comic book characters come to life on screen and be able to play them. It took place in the fictional land of Genosha, which Magneto created for mutants. And there's kind of a bit of, you know, decent bit of a story going through, but, you know, 16-bit games back then, the story was just a few cutscenes. But there was definitely, there were kind of touching on, well, you know, what it means to be free and acceptance and control and stuff like that, which, as we've mentioned, are very prevalent then and now. You could control 5 characters. This was part of the cool part. Wolverine, Cyclops, Gambit, Beast, and Psylocke. I remember at the time just not knowing who the fuck Psylocke was. Just like, why is Rogue not in this game or something? Or Jean Grey. But Wolverine is just like, everyone loves playing fucking Wolverine. It's like the movie character. You can just base the game around him and you could play as him for fucking months. Cyclops was, like, he gets a hard time, doesn't he? In movies and comics and video games, like, he gets like 3 moves in this and it's just is an incredibly boring character to play. But as I said, it was developed by Capcom and coming off Street Fighter 2, they were using the same engine and the animation and visuals are fucking gorgeous in this. I remember it being kind of fluid, but that's because the game I played today had been updated to 60 frames per second. But I'm pretty sure back in the day it played at about 4 frames a second. So I remember it being a little bit more clunky than it was today. But yeah, those juicy, gorgeous visuals from Street Fighter 2, you know, the big, really large kind of character sprites. Fucking brilliant. It was luscious and vibrant. Color palettes is gorgeous. The move list for each character was quite limited. And even today, yeah, it does kind of showcase that. It's easily the weakest part of it. Beast has a cool thing where he can hang from the ceiling and hit people from the roof, which is kind of cool. But the lack of moves was kind of a common thing with games of that era. You had a few different things to do because the game's supposed to last an hour, apparently. After playing it for weeks, you know, it does get a bit tiresome. And the best thing about it was even though it was kind of a single player game, you could play it as a single player, but the emphasis was about the team. Where if and when you die, which you will for me in the first level, all of them died actually in the first level for me. When you die, that character dies, but then you pick another person from the team to continue there. Like essentially you're getting 5 lives, which is more than the paltry 2 or 3 you get from other games or some games giving you 1 fucking life. So that was kind of cool where you do feel like, okay, you know, Wolverine's down, Beast is coming in to try and pick up the slack. And I mentioned spending an incredibly long time playing the game back in the day. And this was because, yeah, this game was just really, 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 really hard. And back in the day, it was known to be really hard. But I still think it was a fantastic game to play back through today, even though I was hoping just to get past 1 boss, but I didn't even make it to the boss. It's just like, okay, yeah, just... let's just put it down.
You fight Sentinels. Yeah, you fight Sentinels and everything in that game.
Because you fight like Apocalypse at the end, I remember. And then you're kind of like, Magneto's not in it. But then, oh, Magneto turns up and he's the one at the end. I remember playing that with my mates and just going, oh, it is Magneto. He's fucking in charge of everything. He's the real bad. And yeah, I remember playing that boss because, you know, back in the day, no checkpoints. You know, you get to the boss, he just destroys you. And then you got to play through an entire fucking level again. Like, is shocking. But I know you'd mentioned
the arcade. Was the arcade game? Because that's my first recollection of playing an X-Men game. Was I was like 10 years old. Like, was X-Men in the arcade? And like that, it was side scrolling, as in like Streets of Rage, Double Dragon, that kind of stuff. You know, team based.
Yeah,
as you say,
it's a different game.
But the
X-Men
were slightly different. Yeah, it was slightly, but because it was slightly different. Again, it had a character in that maybe you wouldn't expect. Like Dazzler was one of the characters. Like it was like Dazzler.
Remember that? Yeah, like what
Storm,
the fuck?
Nightcrawler, and like Dazzler's. Oh, I just it's kind of a shitty power. You're just singing. Like I mean, whatever. Anyway, I would have liked to see something a little bit more hardcore X-Men in there. But again, I was always going to be picking fucking playing the Cyclops or Wolverine anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, fucking Nightcrawler is obviously cool as well. But it was just those... Oh, that's what I loved. I look back so fondly, but I haven't played them since. You know, so I haven't played them in fucking whatever, like 30 years. So I have really fond memories of playing that arcade game to the point where I wanted to play it. You know, there's a pub in Dublin, Token, that had, I'm pretty sure they had it, but it wasn't working when we were there. Well, I'd love to go back and have a go of that. I must see if you can buy them. We can buy those mini retro.
Like, arcade, yeah, because so. It didn't come out, the arcade game. You would have thought that would have been ported to the SNES and fucking Sega straight away. It was massive. Same with the, like, it was in the arcades beside Street Fighter. You know, it was just like, this is massive game. But that didn't get ported to, I think it was a PS3 and an Xbox 360. It was 2010 when that came onto consoles on Xbox Live Arcade. Just going, what the fuck? Like, which is quite bizarre to wait that long to play it. So but I do remember that playing that in the arcade. It was fantastic. And another notable entry, I think, was just for the game physics, the is it the X-Men the Wolverine movie tie-in, which wasn't a particularly good game, but it had the physics where as you took damage as Wolverine, you'd see his flesh start to rip off him. And like was it a PS2 or maybe GameCube game or something like that. For that time, it was like, holy shit, look, you can see a skeleton, like, bit in bits, and then he'd regenerate again, then someone beat the shit out of him, and somebody unloading a, you know, minigun at you, and you just see your fucking flesh tearing off. At the time, that was just fantastic. And it's things like that where you go, this game is amazing, and the game's pretty shit, like, but that's enough to warrant to play
what,
it.
What do you think, Insomniac are going to do? I mean, they're obviously making the Wolverine game. We've seen Spider-Man, but obviously Spider-Man is, he's a different type of superhero. He's not sticking gigantic claws into people, so it's you know, there's no blood and guts in that, you know. I wonder what they do, because we've seen other games from Insomniac, like Ratchet and Clank again. You know, it's they're fun, fucking amazing mechanics and great crack.
It's all about mechanics and traversal. Makes sense.
Exactly, it's all about traversal, whether you're on fucking railings or doing whatever. Whereas Wolverine is he's a dude with claws. He's not firing laser beams, he's not firing big guns, you know,
He doesn't work in an open world scenario. You know what I mean?
Setting. Yeah, so I wonder,
he's not
going to
save a cat
like
from a tree.
so is it semi-open world? Is it like God of War, like I mentioned at the start? You know, God of War,
I think
like
it has to be something
style,
like that.
A real brawler, semi-linear thing. But
I'd say
they're
going for God of War, I'd say. Something exactly
so
like
go,
that, where it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say it'll be... vicious game. It would have to be. I mean,
it's
not like movies.
They might make the bad guys just be fucking robots or something, so you're okay chopping up. But you'd be a real bummer, because the teaser that we got is him sitting in a bar, you know, bloody knuckles and all the rest of it. So it'd be a real bummer. I'd like to see it fucking be fucking like a Logan movie style.
But I think
like,
you get away with that. You get away with it in video games more so than, you know, if a movie is coming out and a Wolverine movie is coming out and the director wants it to be fucking 18s rated, studio will go, no, fuck off, because then, you know, you're cutting your revenue in half from box office alone.
We got one.
But with video games, people get around it. You know, they get around it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like Grand Theft Auto is, you know, rated fucking M for mature or whatever, and it's... they're still making fucking 10 million quid a day from it or something, you know what I mean? It's just,
I
think there won't be too much pressure to dumb it down in terms of the gore and stuff. So, but I'm interested, just to see a studio of that caliber, that with that kind of track record, to take him into a potential God of War kind of slasher scripted, semi-scripted kind of game, with shit tons of fucking cool iconic throwback moves from the comics would be amazing. Like, there's a lot of pressure on them to make an absolute fucking 5-star game, 100%.
Yeah, there's almost that little worry of, you know, what Rockstar did, you know, you know, we just talked about that recently. You know, we what they were going out the back of, you know, with the Arkham series, and then what we've got through the two and the Suicide Squad. So you're kind of like, shit, please don't let that happen with that happen with this. Well, I'm sure Insomniac will knock it out of the park. Their last four games have been what, the three Spider-Men and Ratchet and Clank, Rift Apart, and like four incredible games. So yeah, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed indeed. So yeah, that was that's the end of our retro corner of revisiting. Nice, interesting game back from 30 years ago. And that concludes our look back at the X-Men series, movies and TV and video games. So yeah, just to finalize everything, we don't know what we're doing next week. It's going to be a good movie. We have to pick a good movie. We're on course for that. But just, yeah, just to thank everyone for supporting the podcast and for sharing and liking. Keep the comments and emails coming. If you have anything to say, a comment about what we've been shiting on about, good or bad, email us at middleagedgeeks@yahoo.com. And anything else from yourself, Philly?
No, just to echo what you said. It was a lot of fun to talk through these movies again. So I'm such a massive X-Men fan, and it's great fun to revisit the movies, revisit the kind of the world of X-Men, and maybe you could reboot, you know, what's gone a bit sour, you know, with the superhero movie scene.
Absolutely.
So it was fun to revisit, and just what you said, everybody keep liking and sharing, or whether you want to watch it on YouTube or whatever, just keep doing what you're doing and keep on listening. And look forward to knocking another episode out next week.
Happy days. So on that note, it's bye from me and bye from Phil. See you later.
Take it easy.